Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Oh, hi! If you're looking for another spooky and funny podcast to add to your rotation, check out Anything Bones, now part of the Podmoth Network.
Hey, Boneheads, I'm Sophie Schwartz.
And I'm Caitlin Hart.
And we are the hosts of Anything Bones, the podcast where we talk about bones and bone-related topics.
Soph, what are bone-related topics?
Thank you for asking, Caitlin. This can be anything from mausoleums to murderers, famous skeletons to cadaver dogs.
Bone churches, mummies, serial killers. You'll hear about them all.
And sometimes we have guests stop by and tell us their favorite bony tales.
Check out Anything Bones on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever your little heart desires.
We release new episodes every Saturday.
Bone Voyage!
Are you ready to dive into the depths of intrigue and unravel the caffeinated enigmas that surround us?
Look no further than the electrifying world of Caffeinated Conspiracies, the podcast that's about to jolt your curiosity awake.
Join us for a caffeine-fueled adventure where every sip and every secret is a clue waiting to be deciphered.
In each episode, our dynamic hosts delve into the most thought-provoking and jaw-dropping theories that will leave you wide-eyed and pondering. From mysterious artifacts all the way to the depths of the ocean, cover-ups, conspiracies, the unknown, all with a cup of coffee.
Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe now and stay tuned for mind-blowing episodes that will leave you questioning everything. Remember, truth is stranger than fiction. So let's dive into the mysteries together. Join us on Caffeinated Conspiracies, satisfying your curiosity one cup at a time.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again to hear our brutal and bizarre stories.
Yes, and our drinks and our chasers, because those are some of the best parts.
What are you going to be talking about today, Mom?
I am going to be talking about a murder that happened in Alabama, and then we're also going to talk about a law that I didn't even know existed in Alabama, let alone anywhere. And we'll talk about that. It's crazy, like, that they would have a law that allows people to get away with stuff because they're younger. So.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
Yeah. Pretty controversial. When I was reading the research on this, and I was like, what the are you kidding me? That's a law? Anyway, we'll get to it. No spoilers.
Okay.
What are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to be talking about Malaysian Airlines Flight 370.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And there's just a warning, there's going to be a lot of airline talk that I don't fully understand, like,
okay,
mechanical things on the plane and stuff.
Gotcha.
Like that. So,
okay,
to go with it, I have the paper plane cocktail because it seemed fitting.
Yes.
So the paper plane consists of 3/4 ounce bourbon, 3/4 ounce Aperol, 3/4 ounce Amaro Nino, which can be substituted for Campari, right?
That's what I found, because I went to the liquor store and they looked at me like I was insane when I said, do you carry this?
Okay.
This. And they were like, we don't know what you're talking about. I spelled it out for them, everything. They're like, never heard of it before.
Okay.
So.
And the final ingredient is 3/4 ounce lemon juice. Add the bourbon, Aperol, Maronino, and lemon juice into a shaker with ice and shake until well chilled. Strain into a coupe glass. You ready to give this a try? Sounds funky.
I predict it's going to be absolute garbage. Because I had to use Campari. I hate Campari. I have not had a drink with Campari that I've liked. So
yeah, it is like Aperol's ugly cousin.
Not worse than that. Nope.
That's weird.
Nope. Don't like it. Hate it.
100% hate it. I feel like I could get used to it if I drank a lot, but probably wouldn't make that again.
Never, ever, ever. I do think that Campari is probably not a very equal substitute because I've had a paper plane at a restaurant. Somebody else ordered it and I was like, I've always wanted to try that. And I had a sip. So I've had them and I don't remember thinking that was the grossest thing I've tasted, but this is really gross. I would not make or drink or tell anyone. I mean, but again, I had to make mine with Campari and I think Campari is garbage. So sorry, everybody out there who likes Negronis and Campari, but it's not one of my favorites.
I just looked it up, and apparently Campari is made of a blend between 10 and 70 herbs, flowers, and roots.
Holy 70? Moly.
That seems a bit excessive.
Okay, but how do you get from 10 to 70? Like, I could go 10, 20.
Maybe some are made with 10, and maybe some are made with 70? I don't know.
I don't know which mine is made with, but I hate it. I don't like it.
It also says the exact process for making Campari is a closely guarded secret.
Yeah, because it's garbage and nobody wants to know how garbage is made. That's the only
Campari's
thing I can
very
think
popular.
Of. I know it is, someone and I don't like get it. I know it's
you
in
also
Negronis
didn't like bourbon
and
before we started this, so maybe it'll grow on you. You just gotta make more drinks with it.
I have tried it in a couple of drinks to justify having bought that bottle, and I have not found anything I like with it. It's every – I've tried probably – I think this is the fourth or fifth drink I've tried with Campari in it, and I didn't like it.
Just not a fan?
Nope. Not at all.
Well, let's talk about this Malaysian Airlines flight.
Yes.
It was fairly late on March 8th, 2014, when 227 people gathered at their gate to board flight 370 of Malaysian Airlines. This flight was a very regular flight, having two separate daily takeoff times, flying from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia to Beijing, China, and had hardly any weather concerns other than some regular cloud formations. The flight was scheduled to leave at around 12:35 a.m. and arrive in Beijing around 6:30. The Boeing 777 contained two pilots, 10 cabin crew, 227 passengers, and about 31,517 pounds of cargo when it took off.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah. The flight was scheduled to last about 5 hours and 34 minutes, which would consume about 82,000 pounds of fuel. However, the plane carried 108,000 pounds of fuel, with about 26,000 pounds of reserve fuel in case the plane needed to divert to local airports in case of emergency. Communications between air traffic control and the first officer started before takeoff, and the captain was heard over the radio shortly after takeoff to confirm transfer from the airport's ATC to Lumpur Radio ATC, which covered air traffic control over Malaysia and the surrounding waters. At 12:46, ATC cleared flight 370 to climb to an altitude of roughly 35,000 feet. About 15 minutes later, the captain communicated to ATC that he had reached 35,000 feet, which was confirmed several minutes later. The final message from Flight 370 was heard at 1:20 a.m. It was a transmission from ATC to Flight 370 to communicate with a Vietnamese ATC in Ho Chi Minh when they passed over Vietnam. So the flight path went over Malaysia, over Vietnam, into China.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were transferring between airport air traffic control, like radar that's used over Malaysia, and then the radar used over Vietnam.
Okay. Makes sense.
The last recorded message was from the captain saying goodnight to the air traffic control of the area he was leaving. When Vietnamese ATC never received a message from Flight 370, another pilot used the International Air Distress Frequency to try and contact Flight 370, but only heard static and mumbled words from the flight at around 1:30.
Okay.
Several other calls to Flight 370 were made at 2:39 and 7:13. They were both unanswered, but were acknowledged by the plane's satellite data unit. So it means that they had received it, just they didn't answer the call.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. That's a long time. You said 2-something and 7-something?
Yeah, about...
About four
and a half hours apart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
At 1:20, the flight disappeared from the radar in both Ho Chi Minh and Kuala Lumpur. With regular flight plan, this means that the transponder on the plane that communicates with radar had malfunctioned. Hmm. So I guess radar, the type of radar they used, would send a ping from the ground and it would communicate with all the planes that had this transponder on it, so it'd like bounce off that and they would communicate to each other that way.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm a little uncertain on how radar frequencies work.
Yeah, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
It's like your TV remote, like you press it and it sends a frequency out that your TV corresponds to, and but it sends it back to the remote instead of just being received by the TV, from what I understand. The plane was picked up on military radar at around 1:30, making a right-hand turn towards their destination, which was along their flight path. They had to make like a slight right-hand turn over Vietnam. When suddenly, the plane started to turn left off its scheduled path, heading southwest instead of northeast. So there's pictures of the flight plan from where it diverted, and it shows it's going in almost the exact opposite direction all of a sudden.
And what time was that?
Around 1:30.
Okay.
So right after they had disconnected from the radar thingy. But the military radar worked differently, so it showed the accurate flight plan.
Okay.
So I mentioned earlier that the plane's satellite communications went offline around 1 a.m., but at 2:25, it popped back on and sent a login request. This was received by a ground station, which also noticed the path change. The ground unit tried to call the cockpit at 2:39 and 7:13. Both went unanswered by pilots. One final request was sent to the plane's satellite communication at 8:19, almost 2 hours after it was scheduled to land in Beijing. So they were just kind of like, we haven't seen this plane yet, and it was supposed to be here 2 hours ago. Like, what's going on up there?
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah. It is presumed that Malaysia Flight 370 crashed into the South Indian Ocean between 8:19 and 9:15 on March 8th due to lack of fuel. So they kind of made that ping. They figured, like, okay, the plane was set to have this much fuel. It's been flying for this much time. Like, what's happening? Never got a response back. So they kind of just assumed, like, it was headed towards the Indian Ocean when it lost communication, went off radar, and so they kind of just presumed that's what happened. And those are the facts. Now let's get into some strange information and theories. So after word of the disappearance got to the families of those on the lost plane, many tried wishfully to call their loved ones on board. In total, 19 families called and heard the tone of dialing that everyone's familiar with.
Right.
And were able to dial their phones for up to 4 days after the disappearance, which would have been impossible if the phones were subject to salt water. So I'm sure people have tried to use like their phone underwater and they'll see it. You get no service down there. So it wouldn't be dialing like the when you're trying to call someone and they don't pick it up. Like there's a dial tone.
Right.
And that shouldn't have happened if they were in the bottom of the ocean.
But would it matter? I mean, if somebody's phone is turned off, you know, like if I call you and your phone is off, it's still going to ring through.
But you know, like the disconnected tone where, have you ever gotten that, like trying to call like a,
not a cell phone
that's off or something?
Nope, not a cell
phone. I've gotten that before.
Maybe I've never tried to call somebody whose cell phone is off.
Pretty rare.
I don't call people on their cell phones because that's against the rules. Don't call me on my cell phone. If I get a ring, if somebody calls me, I think either one, somebody's dead. Two, just somebody's dead.
Yeah.
There you go.
You guys are guilty of that on my last birthday because Grandpa died on my birthday in 2017. And on my last birthday, you guys were like, call us when you're off work.
It was 2020 and you were here.
My last one here when I was working.
Oh.
You guys sent me a text like, can you call us when you're free? And I'm like, oh,
blame
God.
Your dad.
For a whole day, I'm thinking someone fucking died.
Blame your dad. Your dad is the one that calls. I don't call because I know the rules.
Okay. So another theory that experts have discussed is a fire on board. So Flight 370 had a large amount of lithium ion batteries commonly used with electronics such as cell phones.
Lithium. Like, were these batteries just the people that were on board, or were they also transporting?
That was part of their 31,000 pounds of cargo. Underneath the plane was a bunch of these lithium ion batteries.
That were
being sent to Beijing for probably cell phone manufacturing or something.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry.
Lithium batteries. Like, when they catch on fire, they can burn for up to, 3 days, I think.
Whoa.
And burn extremely hot at about 2,000 degrees.
Holy moly.
They're not put out by fire suppression systems and expel very toxic fumes like hydrogen fluoride, hydrogen chloride, and hydrogen cyanide.
Ooh.
So these things are super fucking scary. And we all have them in our pockets.
Yay. So excited about that.
This theory was corroborated by some supposed sightings of a burning object in the sky in the area. An oil rig worker about 186 miles southeast of Vietnam saw a bright orange object flying overhead, as well as a British woman fishing in the Indian Ocean. So after the news of the missing plane came out, these two witnesses were like, I saw it look like a meteor falling out of the sky.
Right.
Like, yeah, super weird.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's got to be scary. Just.
Yeah.
Like, your feet start getting hot on an airplane, like the cabin filling with smoke. That's so scary.
Yeah. I don't like it.
So another theory is that the plane landed somewhere else. After the disappearance, many countries became involved in the whereabouts of the plane, including USA. Where the FBI investigators examined Captain Saha's personal computer connected to his flight simulator. So I guess if you're a super fancy pilot, you have your own flight simulator in your basement, and this guy did.
Really?
So after...
Damn!
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool. You can't just go and take a Boeing 777 for a test drive and make sure like right. you're trained up on it. So after examination, FBI discovered a simulation in which the captain left from the Kuala Lumpur, continued along his trajectory flight path to Beijing, but took a left turn to fly along the Strait of Malacca and land on a small runway on an island in the Indian Ocean, similar to where the plane was believed to crash. So 5 months before this plane disappeared, he had run this exact simulation where he flew up there, took a weird bank left out of nowhere, and landed on this little tiny runway on an island.
That's weird.
So pieces of the plane have mm-hmm. presumably been discovered. Like, I think it's 30 pieces of the wing. But the problem is the parts that were discovered have, like, it's not like, oh, it was connected to this exact plane. It's just connected to that model of plane. So the serial numbers on the parts aren't exactly like, this one was put on this plane that disappeared, so it has to be wreckage from that plane. It was just like, this could be from any Boeing 777.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So that, it kind of pokes some holes in it, because I don't think too many of those just disappear into the Indian Ocean, but I could be right. wrong.
Yeah.
So the third theory, which is, anyways, it's UFOs.
Of course.
Shortly after the disappearance of the Flight 370, two satellite videos were published showing a Boeing 777 flying through the sky being followed by three bright objects which were circling the plane right before the plane miraculously disappears into the blink of an eye.
What?
Many people believe that this was a UFO attack and teleported the plane into an unknown location. However, a highly regarded VFX YouTube channel debunked this theory, stating it had every sign of being fake video created using VFX.
Okay.
Because the satellite footage was... So satellites travel at, like, extremely fast. So
yeah,
any clouds would be moving in the frame, and this was just a still image of clouds with a superimposed Boeing 777 on it.
So it was fake.
That was fully debunked, but it was one theory that I saw, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Okay.
But the whereabouts are still unknown of this plane, and it's been 10 years.
Wow. Do you remember that we discussed this a little over a year ago in a chaser?
And it was about a podcast that I watched, maybe?
No, I brought it up because I found an article. It was episode 58, for anybody who hasn't heard it or wants to go back and listen to it. And they found part of the wing, and scientists were trying to use the barnacles found on piece of the wing to locate...
Yeah.
the exact site of the wreckage based on like the water patterns and the growth patterns of the barnacles.
Oh, so another weird thing that I was seeing is if the plane hit like how planes fly and like it hit belly first, it would just tear the plane to pieces. And there's a lot of things on a plane that would float that were never seen. So I was seeing, like, I saw this article and it said if the plane hit, it would have to hit nose down, like vertically.
Straight down, yeah.
Because that would stop a lot of the breaking up of it.
Okay.
And like not cause like seat cushions to float on the water and stuff. Because there were search teams looking for this for years.
Long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just a weird thing that
it is.
There wasn't anything like floating in the ocean or anything. Like, it's just these parts that have washed up on shores, on islands along the Indian Ocean and stuff.
I do wonder why the pilot had that flight simulator the exact location and setup. That's weird.
That's the most like damning evidence I feel. Like,
but then part of me goes, is that real? Or did they make that up?
FBI has been known to be not truthful, so.
That's what I'm saying.
That's very possible.
That's what I'm saying. Like, is it the red herring that they just threw in? Because they were like, don't look at this. Look over here and we're going to make something else look fishy as shit. I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know. No one really knows.
Right, exactly.
The cool thing with those planes is like they have the black box, which records everything. But you have to find it to read the information. It's not like uploaded. So until they find that plane, that no one really knows.
Right. Weird.
Super weird.
Good story.
Yeah. Hopefully we get an answer to it soon, but I doubt it.
Someday. Someday. Well, I mean, I did a year ago, a little over a year ago, talk about how they found part of it and they were trying to find the location based on the barnacle growth, but I haven't seen any updates to that. Of course, I also haven't been looking, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But wild.
Let's hear about your story, Mom.
Okay, so my story is about Jolie Callen, and she was born in on December 29th, 1996. She was raised in Alabama and attended Vincent High School, from which she graduated in 2015. She met Lauren Bunner, who was 2 years older than her at that high school. The two dated for several months and adopted a dog together. Super cute.
Mm-hmm.
Bunner typically kept the dog at his house and Jolie would visit often. People noticed that he was controlling and possessive of Jolie, often preventing her from visiting with her friends, which is not cool and it's a shitty thing to do. Don't do shit like that, people. She attempted to break up with him multiple times, but every time he would threaten suicide. Which, again, don't do that. That's shitty. Eventually, she was able to free herself from the toxic relationship. A few months after she started, after they broke up, she started dating a new guy. But, of course, Bunner was not happy about it. At the end of August 2015, Bunner contacted Jolie and asked her to spend some time together. He said it would just be his friends and they planned to go on a hike together. Jolie had some apprehension about the meetup and texted a friend advising that she would be with Bunner the next day. She stated in the message, quote, "If something happens to me, you'll know who I was with," unquote. So,
suspicious.
Yes. I mean, it might have been a joking comment, but, you know, this is our brutal story, so you know nothing good happened. So, Bunner picked up Jolie, and the two went to a nearby state park. As they started their adventure, Bunner snapped a few pics of Jolie and posted them to Instagram. There is a pic of her in his car with their dog on her lap, and he wrote a caption about them going on a hike together. A short time later, he posted a pic of Jolie walking the dog down the trail. And then not long after that, he posted a pic of Jolie at the top of a viewpoint, holding their dog with her back to the camera. And the picture's really cute. Like, she's holding their little dog, and she's looking out, and it's, you know, this pretty scene. And, well, that's where it goes bad. Within a few moments of taking that picture and posting it to social media, Bunner shot Jolie twice in the head and pushed her body off the cliff.
Ooh.
Yes. Bunner then returned to his car and left the park. Didn't take it long, you know, for him to get arrested for murder, because right after leaving the park, he calmly called 911 and reported the crime. Which,
okay, well,
nice of him to do.
For a criminal to do.
Exactly. Kind of very like, what the fuck, dude? But yeah, he called and he was like, hey, yeah, so I just killed my ex-girlfriend. Although I think he called her like in the call, he called her his girlfriend. And then afterwards, her family was like, no, that's his ex. Anyway, he told investigators that he had gone to the park with the intention of performing a suicide pact. He said they were going to jump off the cliff together. But once they got to the top, they couldn't complete it. So he then claimed that Jolie asked him to shoot her instead, and that he intended to complete suicide himself. But then after he shot her, he was like, oh, maybe I'm not going to do that. And he ditched his suicide plan.
Jesus.
Right. He was arrested that same day. Jolie's family and friends denied that suicide was something she would ever consider. They insisted that she was actually planning for her future rather than trying to end it. So they were like, no, his story's bullshit. So I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that we were going to talk about a weird law. So in Alabama, there is an interesting law in which anyone under the age of 21 who commits a crime can apply for youthful offender status. And he was 20 years old. Additionally, his attorney argued that Bunner needed a psychiatric evaluation to determine if he had Asperger's syndrome. This syndrome is considered a developmental disorder on the autism spectrum with a common characteristic of having difficulty with social interactions. So
I feel like youthful offender should only apply to people under 18.
Yeah, not 22. You're
an adult.
You're 20. Exactly. You know,
yeah.
This whole like setup just screamed fake lies and bullshit. But because Alabama has this law, they could apply for it. And then his defense attorney claiming that he had Asperger's would, you know, it would cause some people, potentially the jury, to interpret his behaviors as lack of remorse and proof of his guilt. You know, most people who commit murder don't call in 911 and say they did it right afterwards. Which he did, and then this whole story. So they were, you know, banking on this youthful offender status and his Asperger's. And initially, he was granted the youthful offender status, which meant that if he was convicted of the crime, per Alabama law, the crime would not appear on his adult record, and he would only serve a maximum of 3 years. For the murder. Is Jesus. That not fucked up?
Yeah, that's very fucked up.
It's insane. So it was initially granted, but the prosecutor and Jolie's family requested that the decision be reevaluated. And a few months later, that status was rescinded. So he was meant to, you know, stand trial as a full-ass adult, which he was. Without the youthful offender status, he was forced to face trial as an adult. In July 2017, he ended up pleading guilty to Jolie's murder and was sentenced to 52 years in prison. And he will be eligible for parole after serving 15 years of that sentence.
Wow. So, yeah. I'm glad he got a real sentence instead of that bullshit one.
Agreed. Can you imagine?
Yeah, just 3 years. That
3 years. That is crazy town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I'm glad that they rescinded it and went, oh no, who, yeah, not okay. Don't murder people and then try and get 3 years for it and claim that you have some reason that you should only serve 3 years for it. It's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, do you have a fun chaser for us today?
Yes, my chaser is both an Instagram account and a YouTube channel.
Oh.
Both by the same name of League of Pigs. So,
okay.
This guy makes a like a racetrack basically. And he has like obstacle courses basically that he sends his pigs down. So
okay. I love it.
He announces it and sets it up like it looks like a real race that you would watch on ESPN. They've got like a timer and like positions, and he's got like a commentator like, oh, Porky's in first now, followed by Stinky or whatever. And
I love it.
He does little videos on his Instagram, but if you want to watch like the full video, and it's like filmed like a documentary almost, the like race. It's got a very calming voice actor and stuff like that, but you can watch like the full race on YouTube, which is pretty cool.
Oh my gosh.
It'd be a fun betting game. Just bet on whatever pig you think is going to win.
That's hilarious.
What's your chase?
How many pigs are racing at one time?
Oh, this video looks like six or so.
Holy cow. Okay, that's a big racetrack.
Yeah. Well, they're not like the giant pink pigs that we have here. They're like,
oh, little, they're mini pigs?
Not mini pigs, but they're not like the big, huge, fat ones.
Okay.
Like, it's like gotcha. A size of a medium dog, it looks like.
Okay. That's cool. I'll have to go check it out.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
That's fun. Well, my chaser is, this will not be very relevant to people who live outside of the area and outside of Oregon, but we went to dinner last night with friends at this place that I've heard of before, but it is literally in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's 2 hours to drive to this place in. It's a shack, but it's called Family Dinner Tree. And you get your choice of chicken or beef. That's it. You have to tell them ahead of time what food you want, chicken or beef. And then the steak that they give you is a 30-ounce steak, and they give you a whole chicken. Whole chicken. And there's salad and beans and rolls and dessert. And it was really, really good. We have heard people talk about it for years, saying how good the food was. And we went last night with a bunch of friends. And I would say it was worth the 2-hour drive in a group like that, because we just all hung out and had a good time together. And but the food was phenomenal. The best part, okay. Of course, my favorite thing to eat was the dessert. It was fantastic. But it's literally like this little, I mean, it looks like a shack from the outside, but there's running water and the food is, and there's bathrooms and stuff. But the doors were open and a cat came in and had dinner with us.
Oh, that's cool.
Random cat. Yeah, I'm sure he probably lives out there, but like he climbed up on the bench and sat next to me and he was hanging out. And then apparently he's done this before, because as soon as we like they bring you to go bags to put your stuff away, because there's no way you can eat all of that food. As soon as I put the chicken away, the cat left. He was like, oh, you're not going to feed me anymore? I'm done. I'm done with you. He was a super cute cat, though. And then when we got in the car to leave, I was like, wait, did anybody get the cat? I want the cat. Forget my chicken and steak. Give me the cat.
Yeah. It was just a little to-go box.
Gray and black tabby cat that was super cute.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah. Enjoyed hearing your story today, Mom.
Yeah, same. Those weird theories of what happened to that plane.
Yeah, no one really knows.
Not yet. Maybe they will someday. Nope. All right. Love you, bud.
Already. I love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.